Thank you for tuning in to the Design Podcast. My name is Dustin Mader, and I'm a visual artist. I've always been inspired by the creative muse, and I'm always interested into hearing where it comes from and other creative individuals. In tonight's episode, we'll be speaking with a good friend, composer and maestro, Jared Impachachaha Tate. Hey, bud. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Hey, it's good to be here, man.
Right off the bat, who are you and what do you do?
Well, my name is Jared Impachachaha Tate, and I'm a Chickasaw classical composer. And what that means is that I am a classical composer, and specifically a symphonic and chamber music composer. And I am a Chickasaw Indian from Oklahoma. And I identify that with that very specifically as a Chickasaw classical composer.
Right on. What inspires you?
Lots. You know, it's actually, that's a really cool conversation to have because, I mean, everybody in life has so many facets of how they've been affected. I mean, you know, day by day, we're always moved by something. But I guess if I were to kind of generalize or thumbnail my passions or inspirations, is one is that of being an American Indian, and the second is that of being a classical musician. And within those two kind of, you know, big categories, there's all kinds of kind of subcategories that go on. And if I were to draw upon, I guess, let's say the classical part first, you know, I grew up as a pianist, and both my parents were involved in theater and music. And so as a result, I was exposed as a classical musician to a huge wealth of music of composers from all over the world. And so because my parents were both involved in theater, I saw a lot of ballet and opera, musical theater, modern dance, you know, and straight plays, these kinds of things. And so I feel that my kind of composition inspiration from all that came from is to be theatric. I love theatric works. I like works that feel larger than life, that have large expression. Yeah. And if you really think about it, back in the day, opera and ballet were the movies of the time. And so if you go see in Guardians of the Galaxy right now, well, of course, everybody just feels huge and very, very overexpressed and that kind of thing. And well, that was the expression of the time with opera and ballet. And so I love theater. I love theatric expression. Yeah. And on the Indian side, this is where kind of the bridge happens. My mother was Irish, and she was the choreographer and dancer of the family. And my father is Chickasaw Indian, and he is by profession a lawyer and a tribal judge and a retired special district judge. But also dad was a classically trained baritone and pianist. And so it's kind of interesting that my classical piano training actually came from my Indian side first, and then they were both involved in theater. And so it was kind of like this mix from both sides. But I feel that my parents' involvement in theatric expression had a great impact on my romantic feeling of the ethos of Indian country. Mm-hmm. So as I identify as an American Indian, and specifically as a Chickasaw Indian, I feel very theatric about it. I feel very romantic, and I feel that there is the word ethos is a word that I use a lot, because I feel like it expresses this depth, legendary feeling about being Indian. And I embrace that very, very deeply. I love feeling that way about that. And I encourage a lot of other American Indian people, and especially kids, students of mine, to feel the same way about themselves.
Right on. I mean, that really, it really is a, it's cool to hear you break it down like this. It's refreshing in a way that, you know, it's just another way, another facet of life as an American Indian.
that people don't really get at times, or their perceived notions are, one way, and to kind of see 21st century still living culture. It's awesome.
It is. And, I got to be honest with you, just to be really raw about it. I mean, man, being Indian, it's cool. It's a really cool thing to be an American Indian. I love it. And I encourage other Indian folks to feel the same way about that. And I think it's, I'm very passionate about another aspect about that. And that is, we come from a history that's definitely extremely complicated and emotional and sad and, and triumphant. There's so many dynamics to our history that are actually really, really hard. And I, as a person here in the year 2018, I remind myself that my ancestors did all the hard work.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, they're the ones that walked 800 miles. I could never do that, to relocate from one place to another. They're the ones that engaged in the Revolutionary War and the Civil War and the war. It's like every possible war known to man they were involved in. They came over and recreated an entire new nation. And they did that so that you and I could do what we're doing.
Yeah.
And, look, man, I've got running water. I've got a computer. I've got, you and I are talking on an app for a podcast.
Yeah.
Things that they could only dream of their own descendants being able to do. And so I feel that it is our obligation and fortune to stand on their shoulders and hopefully they would look at us and go, yes, that's why I did the work, so you could do that. Thank you for accomplishing that.
Yeah.
I think we're honoring them by being successful. And when I mean successful, I mean successful personally, meaning having confidence, having love for ourselves, and being proud of who we are in all the most positive ways.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, you quantify what Linda Hogan wrote about, that you are the love and the hopes and dreams of your grandparents and living
yes.
manifest.
Yes.
And,
that's
I really
beautiful.
Like that.
Yeah.
The next question I'm going to ask is, what are you doing to be a good ancestor? And this can be for the nation, or this can be for humanity as a whole. I know there was a teacher that once said that artists find the way, and that that they are they're the pathfinders for society as a whole. And that if they can't find the way, then the way is truly lost. And that as Marcus Ammerman said, that, he was feeling like a scout, he was going out beyond the comfortable regions and defining new pathways.
Yeah.
And I feel that as an artist, you're doing that. And I feel like that's kind of adding to that being a good ancestor, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. Go ahead, please.
Oh, no. It's a really good question. And it's actually a heavy question. Actually, you're putting a lot of pressure with that question, but it's a necessary pressure. We all have to ask ourselves every day when we get up, what am I going to do that's right?
Yeah.
And so it's a positive pressure to put on yourself. So it's a good question, Dustin. I think that in general, the way I'm trying to be a good ancestor is to project and inspire to other people to be confident, passionate, and loving. And not necessarily in that order. I mean, because I believe you need to be loving and passionate to be confident. I mean, they kind of go in a circle depending on what the circumstance is. But, like for instance, when I'm teaching students, and, I've really focused on teaching American Indian kids. And of course, I'm very passionate about that. So there's a passion that comes in. Mm-hmm. And about what I'm doing to help, because I want to help them gain confidence, and I do it through love. And so those words kind of intermix all the way around. And I know actually that when my students are my students, I know they can tell I really care about them.
Yeah.
And I also am very aware that affects them very deeply. And It's so cool to know that, you know, to have that kind of positive power and impact on people's is a real blessing, and to be aware of it, I think, is just awesome. It feels great. So I love teaching because I know I can help affect their own confidence through that passion and love. And so that's like kind of a teaching thing, but also in my music, in the music that I write, I'm very focused on creating works about American Indians that are how do I say it? That they feel legendary, right? So, for instance, you could take a piece of history in a topic, like you could write an opera about an event in history, which is what a lot of operas do. And you could make it very technical, like, okay, this person went here and then they moved here and this kind of thing. And you could get very technical about the history. But what I like to do is dig deep into the legend of it and how that legend can identify with anybody in the world. Like like kind of make it larger than life. And in particular, I like to make sure that there's no like specific like political statement or, you know, social statement necessarily. I like to make it something that everybody can just envelop themselves in and be inspired. And so I guess in terms of being a good ancestor, I like to kind of carry that entire vibe that I just described. And I guess the three words I would kind of constantly sum up is passion, confidence, and love.
And it seems that you're kind of you the way you're kind of filtering in a sense is almost like you're giving it making ensuring that there's a timelessness and not like an expiration date when we're on such, you know, contemporary topics. Sometimes you can get lost in the shuffle if you kind of get hung up with that, I suppose.
I totally agree. And you know, Dustin, if you really think about it, in the world of entertainment today, let's just go ahead and just, you know, hook onto movies. Movies are an incredibly saturated part of everybody's lives these days. I mean, movies are just like we're all about movies. And over and over and over since the development of the movie itself, it's been those timeless legendary tales that have always stayed, right? And again, it goes back, and if you go back, the opera and the ballet that happened before that, but also, and that's kind of it, that's in the Western tradition, but even in traditional traditions, you know, the folk traditions of people, it's always the legends, it's always the timeless stories that come up over and over and over again in the human experience that stay. We're telling the same story over and over, but just in all kinds of new ways because we can. But it's a very Joseph Campbell approach that I have, and that is, you know, that whole hero with a thousand faces. There's that hero's journey is constantly coming up over and over and over. I mean, look, you know, you can go back to any kind of like Gilgamesh story or any kind of a the prophet, you know, where he's, you know, his journey of leaving his society and going into a new personality and all that kind of stuff. It's that constant hero's drive. And you can do the same thing now with SpaceX. You know, here you got this guy, Elon Musk, who has all these adversary things and he goes against all challenges and bam, he launches rockets into space. It's a great story, you know? And that story will become a legend as soon as we start colonizing Mars. I mean, he's going to be a legend. It's going to turn into the stuff of legends, just like many other people. So we're kind of doing that over and over and over. And I say embrace it because that's the constant human condition. So I love to constantly embrace that in my art.
Indeed. And that's wow, it really is a lot to kind of process in there. But I like that. I appreciate that. What are you working towards in your work? I mean, is there like a narrative? I know for me, the longer I've been doing this, and I've been making art that I mean I'm consciously aware of since I was 2 years old. I remember when my mom had given me praise and. Because she could see that I actually drew a train and an engineer when I told her I'm drawing a train and an engineer. But I have this many themes that I'm kind of working towards and trying to convey. And it's like more than one piece of art is telling this story. You know, I don't know if it's just a story of my own life, but it's something that I'm working towards. But what are you working towards with your work? It's so diverse, and you do things that are, you know, maybe not purely for yourself, or are, and I guess that's maybe not the right way to, you know, you do commission work for different communities, but is there a theme or aesthetic that you're working towards?
Well, I guess my goal in general is to saturate classical repertoire with as much Indian presence as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. And the really cool part about that is that that could take 20 lifetimes.
Absolutely.
So it's like, where do you start and where do you end? And I guess, okay, let me give you an example. Okay. So let's focus on language. As a classical composer, I am involved in an art form that has languages in art song and opera, oratorios, musical theater, that kind of thing. But language is present in all of these theatric productions. And so, what's the so-called classical languages are like, you know, Latin, French, German, Italian, that kind of thing. And of course, as time has gone on within the medium of classical fine art, well, it's now including Chinese and Russian and every possible language in the world is now there. And yeah. I have a wonderful opportunity as a trained classical musician to bring in our native languages. And they've been done, you know, in spots here and there over the last 100 years. But I'm creating entire works that are sung in an entire language. And what I mean by that is, like, for instance, just, you know, a year and a half ago, I just premiered an oratorio, a 35-minute oratorio, completely in the Chickasaw language. And this oratorio had a 140-member chorus with a 25-member children's chorus, 3 classical soloists, an entire symphonic orchestra, the entire time sung in our language. And it was about one of our important legends of early migration that we had.
Yeah.
And so that's one example. So that piece is entirely in Chickasaw. Another example is I wrote a song cycle for the South Dakota Symphony for a solo baritone and orchestra of 30 minutes entirely in the Lakota language. Shortly after I premiered the oratorio in Chickasaw, I premiered a cantata in the Ponca Indian language about a Ponca chief named Standing Bear. And so, and the list goes on. I mean, I did a with the Tulsa Symphony recently, I did a work in the Creek Indian language of Creek hymns that were orchestrated. So I'm very passionate about bringing that Indian presence. And of course, the language is a really strong way to do it. And what's really cool about that is when they're premiered in the communities, that those community members who speak the language are hearing their own language in these theatric productions.
Yeah.
That is, I could just do that forever. And I mean, so my goal is to bring as much as I possibly can in my lifetime of that into the classical repertoire, onto the stage, to bring our Indian presence on to that concert stage.
Absolutely. I feel that that's in a lot of disciplines where, you know, that wherever you see indigenous artists that are working towards it, like at least in the Native American community, you know, it's one of our people get their foot in the door and we try holding it up for as many people to get in as possible.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's really incredible, man. I have seen this kind of, it's one of the things I've noticed about your work. And I've really admired over the years. And I really enjoy that you've come on and are sharing this with our audience tonight.
Yeah, cool. Thanks.
Is there something you want to discuss, something that you're working on right now, or a project or an idea that's kind of percolating?
Yeah. There's several. Let me see if I can thumbnail. One that I'm really proud of is that I'm doing a new piece for the Dallas Symphony Orchestra. I happen to know the principal bassoonist for that orchestra, and I'm composing a bassoon concerto for him. And one thing that in terms of like a topic for a bassoon and orchestra, well, it's very rhapsodic, I guess. It's very tone poem like, meaning it's very just image related. But okay, so like the bassoon has a timbre to its sound that's very similar to a deer when a deer calls. Now, when deers call, it's not like, it's a little gruff, but I mean, but if you romanticize it, that timbre has this upper baritone quality that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
And so there we have a Chickasaw story of the ghost of the white deer.
Yeah.
That you probably know that. And we have there's a I mean there's a guy L. Dan O'Keefe, who created a painting over it, and it's a beautiful story about this white deer. And of course, very much like the white buffalo with the plains people, that's a very sacred animal. Where for us, it was the white deer.
Yeah.
And that happens around the world. That albino anomaly happens around the world and becomes sacred to different peoples around the world. So ours is that white deer. And so I'm creating a piece that expresses the story of the brave who goes to hunt this white deer to be able to gain the hand of this Minko's daughter. So he
Yeah.
goes, and then Minko says, "You have to bring me back a white deer." And the legend is that it's that the guy goes out and he shoots the deer, but the deer keeps running, and so
Well,
they don't.
not only that, I
Yeah.
mean that the fire in its eyes when it turns toward the man and
Yeah.
charges right at, excuse me, charges right at him,
See.
and it pierced his heart, and it's still the arrow was still in its heart. It never dropped.
Right. Exactly. So here back at home. The gal has pledged to wait for him to come home, and in the smoke of the fire, she can see the image of this white deer running, and she's waiting for it to die so her love can come home. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. I mean,
Absolutely.
man, it could be a movie. It could be so many things because it has that universal legendary imagination. There's so many ways it could be treated in terms of our human experience and spirit. There's so many. So I'm making a rhapsodic piece where the bassoon is that deer's song. The bassoon is literally the song of that deer throughout. So, and then of course the orchestra will, be like the guy. There'll be different things, things where they're chasing and there's love and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet fantasy type of thing in the orchestra.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's one work I'm doing. And again, that's the kind of stuff I like to bring to the stage. And the other work I'm working on right now, actually, which is I've been given the okay to talk about it, is that there is a gal, a playwright in Los Angeles, who has hired me to be her orchestrator and arranger for a dramatic musical about the true story of Pocahontas.
Wow.
Yeah, the true version. And I'll tell you, man, I am knocked out by her script. And I'm on board. I think it's fantastic, and I'm just thrilled that she asked me to be her orchestrator and arranger for this. And so that's another project that I'm working on right now. I just got back from Los Angeles from working with her on that for about a week, and I'm really, really excited to do that. I think her script is really, really good. It's excellent.
Wow, that's
So.
fabulous.
Yeah, so it'll be like a dramatic musical. So you kind of think of like a Les Miserables type style, like approach to the dramatic story of Pocahontas. And for those who don't know that story, Pocahontas is, she never married John Smith. That was the stuff of Disney and Hollywood. But they were actually really strong allies, which was so important. But she eventually married somebody else and had a couple children. She died in Europe, in England. But the story of her as a person was really compelling because she truly was constantly leveraging herself in a position of keeping the balance between the tension between the colonists and her people, the Powhatans. And I mean, the story of strength from this gal is just it's so inspiring and so compelling. And that's what I love about this script is that it focuses on her and her entire experience and how she grew and changed as a person throughout her entire life,
Oh yeah.
being that pivotal person.
And
So that's a
she
project I'm
was
really.
like 12 years old when that incident happened, or was it 11? I mean, it was,
well, when it first started going down, but I mean, it went through an entire life. I mean, she became this total go-between constantly, and she was leveraged between all kinds of people. I mean, it was amazing how much she was being leveraged by all kinds of people, including family and foreigners and all that kind of stuff. And the responsibility that was put on her shoulders was really immense. So she's another hero story that I am very drawn towards. And, you know, honestly, at this time of a lot of the stuff that's going on about, you know, of empowerment of women in our country right now, that's redefining itself, I think it's a very timely type of story to be told. And how thrilling to do that and have an American Indian as an icon for that story. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of that. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, what do you hope for the future in your creative field and what you've brought to the medium? What do you hope in the next 20 years? You know, we've had conversations about the things that we do today will be reflected in being taught in other venues in the future. But what are some specifics for you that you're hoping for? Based on what you're building towards?
You know, I think in general, I want to see more and more Indian leaders in everything. I have a very strong belief that American Indians have the right to claim their influence on American history, because it's real. I mean, you know, America is born on Indians. That's it. That's the reality. And my dream is to see American Indians own that every single day, stronger and stronger and stronger. And at the same time, I think it's really important for Americans to be proud of their Indians. You know what I mean? It's a very unique relationship in the world that doesn't exist anywhere else. I mean, we're 500 some odd nations within one nation. That's unique to the entire planet.
Yeah.
And I believe, I mean, look, you know, Indians aren't going anywhere. I mean, we're here. I mean, and we're increasing in numbers. Our language revival, our cultural revivals are very, very real and very solid. And I'm so thrilled to be a part of that. I'm very excited to see what the future is. And so in all fields, music, medicine, space travel, you know, civic engineering, whatever it is, you know, that agriculture, I want to see more and more Indian leaders be leaders in that for America. I want to see an American Indian president.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see American Indians all over that showing the way and taking that lead and literally saving America. I think Indians have the power to do that.
Indeed.
Well, I know that's kind of a big one.
Yeah, that is a big one. That is a big one. And it's a lot to digest, but you know, that's what you get when you have a person that deals with not just the tree, but the forest as a whole. And, you know, in that metaphorical sense, you know, you've always kind of seemed to have your eye on the big picture and never lost sight of that.
Thanks.
What are some ways that folks get in touch with you or purchase your work or see your work even? What are some venues that they can do this?
Well, I mean, the first thing is to go to my website. My website is jerodtate.com, JERODTATE.com. And I have every possible recording I have of all my works there on my works page. So, you know, of course you can read about my biography and stuff like that, but if you want to listen to everything, there's a couple videos, including one that you and I did together, the Spider Brings Fire video on there. And so, but on the works page with all my concert music, people can browse through and listen to most of what I've done. I mean, it takes time to get everything recorded, of course, over time, but that's where they can go. And I am actually not a social media person. I keep it to website and email. But on my website, you can email me. It's also got my phone number. And to be quite honest with you, I'm like, text me, anybody. I mean, call me, text me, it's fine. You know, I think I love that. It's just like somebody, you know, I think a phone call is always awesome when somebody's like, "Hey, I read your stuff." I was like, "Yeah," and I love getting into conversations. So, I feel that that's far less of an invasion of privacy than social media is.
Yeah.
I think because it's direct, it's like, you know, one on one, and it's very clear, you know. And so I've had most of my success with communication with people just emailing me and calling me on the phone. So,
We're right on. Well,
yeah.
dude, I really appreciate it. This was wonderful. Please come
Yeah.
back. I would love to have you on again. And I also wanted to add, I really enjoyed seeing you perform with the what was it called? The Sunrise and our Day in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
That was marvelous to see all of you guys up there, Tim Navacoya and just all of you performers up there were just it made that silent film epic, and the music that accompanied that donkey will be forever remembered.
You know, for those who have no idea what we're talking about, that was the Native Crossroads Film Festival down at the Oklahoma University in Norman. And there was a very old silent film that was made about Santa Fe by a non-Indian filmmaker, but the poetry was by a Cherokee guy, from what I understand. And so it was that very old Americana style of movie making that's, you know, now we all kind of like, oh, that's really cheesy and everything. And so they were looking for a way to reconstitute that somehow. And so we involved four native musicians who were experts in their own fields. And so we had me on with a classical ensemble, and we had a traditional Kiowa drummer and singer, and a traditional Comanche flutist, and a traditional, well, an Apache modern electric violinist. And so as a group, we all contributed live music to this silent film to give it just a very, very different life to it by all native musicians. So that was really fun. So yes, that and yes, and of course, for some reason, there was always this donkey and all these scenes carrying wood and stuff. And it was just so that was kind of like the ongoing joke is like, what's with the donkey in the film? You know, so, so, but no, I'm really glad you were there, and it was a lot of fun. There's a lot of cool stuff going on with Indians.
Absolutely. Well,
Yep.
once again, thank you, my man.
All right, you have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Once again, thank you for coming in tonight, Jared. I appreciate it. And thank you, everyone that tuned in. I hope this show is continuing to evolve and improve. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Peace of Lit Show. Good night.